Our reading is from the book of Acts, chapter 2, verses 44 to 47. All who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all, as any had need. Day by day, as they spent much time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. And day by day the Lord added to their number those who were being saved. Our second reading is from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. And this is a reading from the version of the Bible called The Message. Let me tell you why you are here. You are here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and you will end up in the garbage. Here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up to God, this generous Father in heaven. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
In the fall of 2005, I had the great privilege of taking a team of people to Kenya, to a little community a couple hours from the coast and from Nairobi, to a community called Chengoni. There we slept in tents with the scorpions and a few snakes, in the dirt, basically, and worked on building a school community center for the local people, as well as operate a medical clinic and a pharmacy there, where we had taken two doctors. People would walk for hours to get to this clinic because they had never seen a doctor before. And we delivered babies and stitched up gashes and dispensed medication to these people for hours there. The land itself was dry and dusty and devoid of much plant life. Yet each day, kids would come out of seemingly the dust and show up at our campsite, swarming us. And by a couple days into the trip, each of the children had adopted one of us on the team. And so we would be walking along, and all of a sudden, some little hand would slip into your hand, and you'd walk along. A little girl of about 6, I would have guessed, but they're so small, you don't know what their age are. She had adopted me while I was there. Every once in a while, we would see to the side or quietly somebody pick up a little handful of dirt, and they'd put it in their mouths and they'd swallow it. The earth was bright red, so you can imagine it was full of iron. And this is why they were eating dirt, because they could get some of the iron and minerals that they craved. We would go to the school on a couple of occasions and watch as the children lined up with their little plastic bowls, and the women who were mixing the corn and mash over a wood fire, whatever wood they could find, would scoop the mash into the kids' bowls, and they would say grace, and then they would eat. And you would know, as we were told, that this may be their only meal of the day. They may have saved some of it to take home to a little sibling, but that's all they had. So while we were there, while this team was there, we planned with a local Christian organization to host a soccer tournament while we were there. We had brought the soccer balls, and we had paid for this tournament and for buses to bring local youth in, and we had paid for the prizes, which were going to be, for the winners, a half a loaf of bread. That was the prize. Of course, I was moved by many, many things on that trip, my first trip to Africa, but one event moved me more than any other. While we were at this soccer tournament, my little girl, I can't even remember her name, I just remember her face, had been walking, spending most of the day with me. They weren't playing soccer, the little girls. And we would chatter away to each other, even though we didn't understand each other, but it was fun anyway. And every once in a while, the little girls would talk to each other, and then they'd titter, like we had done something. I'm sure we amused them greatly while we were there. So on this day of the tournament, she spent most of the day with me. We had brought sandwiches from our camp. We had three meals a day, but we didn't see anything in sight for these little kids, unless possibly they went home, or maybe their big brother was playing and would give them some bread. So as the day concluded and we were leaving, most of us had taken something, not knowing what the food would be like. We had taken something with us to eat, and I had a little bag of mixed nuts in my pocket. So at the end of the day, I didn't really want to draw attention to it, but I pulled out this little bag of mixed nuts, and I handed it to my little friend. And she gently took that bag from me with a big smile, and she, right there, opened it up, and she went around to all of her friends and gave each of them an individual nut until they were all gone, saving only one for herself. She could have done a lot with those nuts if she'd taken them home or ate them herself, but she didn't. And I was amazed and have wondered many times at that exchange since then. I know that few of us in our culture will give even out of our abundance for fear that we might not have enough for ourselves. I have thought long and hard over the years of the passage as well that we read from Acts this morning. I'm going to read again. All who believed in Christ were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all as any had need. Day by day, as they spent much time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. And day by day, the Lord added to their number those who were being saved. Those earliest followers of Jesus got it. They lived on the fringe of society. They weren't mainstream by any means, those first Christians. They lived to serve God and to serve each other in the world. Jesus' teachings to live simply, avoid violence, care for each other, let love and sacrifice be the essence of who you are and what you do were the very characteristics of the early church. And it was not only profoundly effective, it was attractive. It invited people in and it changed them. It made them into little Christs, which is the meaning of Christian. It was certainly not the way of the world, the way those early Christians lived. It was the way of a people who wanted to change the world, make it better. I don't know if any of you know of Samantha Bee. She's a Canadian comedian, writer, political commentator, but I read a quote from her this week, and it said that love does not win unless we start loving each other enough to fix our problems. Love does not win unless we start loving each other enough to fix our problems. What would it take for Christians to be countercultural again? To make as dramatic a statement to the world today as it made to the world in those first couple of centuries? I confess, as I thought about it this week very seriously, that it's not easy to be countercultural today when we're so comfortable. I like to be comfortable. I do. We don't want to be countercultural if it's going to cost us personally. And I really don't like to be that inconvenienced. But I thought of one caveat to that this week. I would be prepared to be inconvenienced and to sacrifice if I knew that I was part of a community who would do the same. And I have this thought a couple of nights this week. It is amazing what your brain does in the middle of the night when you're awake. You dream and scheme or worry and fret. And most of the things that go through my brain at night, I would not want to see the light of day. But I have this thought. I wondered what we would be able to do as a church if all who wanted to follow Christ were willing to sacrifice as they did those years in the early church. Yet I looked at this scripture and said, no way do I want to sell everything and give it away. I'm being honest. I don't think it's very realistic. It wasn't realistic in their day to sell everything, because what happens when you sell everything? You have nothing and somebody has to look after you. So that's not what it's about. So I wondered instead, for my own self, what it would mean to take 10% of what I have and give it to the work of Christ right now. I'm not saying my possessions, selling my property, but giving 10% of my financial worth today, my savings, any investments I had. And I thought, would I be prepared to give it? I thought long and hard about that one. And I thought I would, if I thought I were part of a community that was willing to sacrifice like that. Don't you think that every Christian giving 10% would totally change who we are as a church and what we could do as a church? Yes? We don't get many amens in our church. But would we in our hearts be prepared to do that if it meant it would make a significant difference in our community, in our world? It is a radical concept to the world, but it's not for Christians. To be disciples of Christ is to follow the way of sacrifice. The early followers of Jesus realized very early in the establishment of the Christian community that what they had was for the benefit of all and did not belong to anyone. It was all God's. This was the radical generosity and community that Jesus not only preached, but practiced. It was very much, I think, like my little friend with those bag of mixed nuts. She never thought of keeping what was given to her as a gift as long as anyone else was in need. This was, in fact, as countercultural in Jesus' day as it would be today. It set the tone for a new faith, one that told the story of sacrifice, of simple living, of hope and generosity and forgiveness. Perhaps this is what Jesus meant when he said, unless you become like a little child, you will not enter the kingdom of God. That we are to be as innocent and as generous as children can be, to the point where we willingly give, not of what our extra is, but we give whenever somebody else is in need. Are we willing to sacrifice like that? Today is World Food Sunday. World Food Day began in 1945 to mark the founding of the United Nations Food and Agriculture Division. World Food Day's aim is to increase awareness of global food issues and to advocate year-round action to alleviate hunger. To see the disparity between, as Candace described to the children, what we have compared to what developing nations have. These days, global food issues embrace not only undernourishment today, but obesity. I don't know if anybody knows this, but we have gone long beyond the tipping point where obesity is now a bigger health issue than malnourishment. About 2 billion people in the world now are considered obese, while around 750,000 are undernourished. But don't let the statistic fool you. Obesity itself has been caused by undernourishment. Many are obese because of poor nutrition, eating great amounts of carbohydrates, rice, pasta, breads, with little access to protein, fruits, and vegetables, and the health risks are numerous. It was disturbing this week to read that our children are the first generation in history, whose life expectancy is less than our generation, and it's due to food insecurity. In Canada, throw out a number. How much do you think we waste? How much food do you think we waste, percentage-wise? Anybody have a guess?
50.
Very close. It's 40. 40% of our food, or about $27 to $31 billion worth of food, according to the Value Change Management Center, an independent think tank based in Guelph, Ontario, 40% of our food is wasted. 51% of the wasted food is wasted in our homes. Just in our homes. It gets tossed from our households. And that's not talking about, you know, the strawberries you put in your fridge that go a little mold on them. Or the potatoes or carrots that are growing fur or sprouting. That's not what we're talking about. The report talks about edible food that simply gets chucked. Why? Partly because we load our plates with portions we don't finish. Partly because we throw out food based on best before labels, even if we're not reading them properly or the food is still good. We know, you know, don't you, that food is good after its best before date. But mostly we tossed food because, unlike so many other places on earth, we think food is cheap and accessible. It's easier to buy more of it, so let's just scrape our plates in the garbage and call it a day. We have no real concept of the scarcity of food elsewhere in the world. We don't know what it's like not to have grocery stores overflowing with food from any place in the world we desire. We don't know. And I was disturbed by this in particular. A related issue that goes along with food waste is that when food ends up in landfills, when it decomposes, it releases methane gas. As Environment Canada puts it, methane is 21 times more potent than carbon dioxide in terms of its global warming potential. 21 times. Emissions from Canadian landfills account for 20% of national methane emissions. So when we scrape off our dishes after a large meal, too full to finish the remaining scraps on our plate, we rarely pause and think about the significance of that particular action. It seems routine to us. If we have leftover food scraps that are unfit for eating, shouldn't they be thrown in the garbage or the compost? Yet our routine practices unfortunately make it difficult for us to conceptualize the magnitude of global food waste. I don't want to leave on a bad note, though. There is good news. On September 22nd, an article came out in the New York Times by Nicholas Kristof. He says this: as world leaders gathered for the United Nations General Assembly, All evidence suggests that we are at an inflection point for the ages. The number of people living in extreme poverty, which is less than $1.90 per day, American, has tumbled by half in two decades. The amount of people living in extreme poverty has tumbled by half in the last two decades. And the number of small children dying has dropped by a similar proportion. That's 6 million lives a year saved by vaccines, breastfeeding promotion, pneumonia medicine, and diarrhea medicines. Historians may conclude in the future that the most important thing going on in the world in the early 21st century was a stunning decline in human suffering. That's good news. As recently as 1981, 44% of the world's population lived in extreme poverty, according to the World Bank. Now the share is believed to be less than 10% and falling. It is the best story in the world today. That by Jim Yong Kim, the president of the World Bank. He said it's the best story in the world today. For the entire history of the human species until the 1960s, a majority of adults were illiterate. Now, 85% of adults worldwide are literate, and that share is rising. Good news. Internationally, inequality is on the decline because of gains by the poor in places like China and India. Good news. The UN claims or aims to eradicate poverty by 2030. Eradicate extreme poverty by 2030. Just think about that. Many of us will still be around then to see that. And experts believe it is quite close. It is possible to get quite close to that. We have a decent chance of virtually wiping out ills that have plagued humanity for thousands of generations, from illiteracy to the most devastating kind of hand-to-mouth poverty. Global extreme poverty has fallen by half in 20 years. We can do it. Now, cynics are suggesting that if more children live, they will grow up to have more children, and it'll just exacerbate and bring about the cycle, but that is not true. As it turns out, it happened in the West, and it will happen in places where there has been extreme poverty, that when the birth rate climb, or when children continue to live, the birth rate goes down. Because the children are living and cared for. As girls are educated and contraception becomes available, birth rates tumble, just as they did here in the West. East Indian women are now averaging just 2.4 births, Indonesian women 2.5, and Mexican women just over 2.2. Birth rates are falling. It's good news. Now more than ever, we need to step up our efforts to meet the urgent needs worldwide, from war to climate change to refugees, even as we acknowledge the greatest gains in human history going on today. It is no time for complacency. The momentum has been built, and we have to keep going. Build on that momentum, because we can do it. We need to spur our efforts to accelerate what might be the most important trend in the world today. What would we give to make that difference? Christians can be the first to step up. This community of faith can make a difference by making every effort to reduce food insecurity in our own communities. If every church across Canada would change its own community, the world would change. What can we do together if we strive to live as the early church did, sacrificially? We are the stewards of God's creation. We have a responsibility collectively tend to creation responsibly. We can be trend setters in our community. Christ calls us to be salt and light, to bring out the God flavors and the God colors in the world, to make God visible in the world. This is how we do it, by changing the world. As Jesus said in the Gospel of Matthew, keep open house, be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God. It is the people of God, us, who will draw people to God. Our generosity, living simply, hopefully, living with hospitality. We are the good news that the world wants to see and hear. And may we share what we have with joy for the sake of being good news. In just a few minutes, you're invited to come out and have lunch with us. A simple lunch. Rice and beans. It's what much of the world eats today. We will have a meal at lunch that will be more than some will get all day today. Engage each other in conversation. I invite you to do that. Maybe get to know somebody you don't know, as Anne invited you to come next week and vision about pastoral care. We need to tend to each other, know each other, care for each other. Do the work of caring, becoming community. And maybe dare to ask the question as you're having lunch together, what would you be prepared to sacrifice in order to make a difference? Let's spend a few moments now in reflection and contemplation. There are two prayer stations at the side.